cars in the driveway. The garage is full of junk. It'll take me a week to clean it, but by then I'll still be drunk. I got the blues. Oh, a home on the blues. Well, man's home is his castle. This one's just a hassle. Home on the blues.
Hello, and thanks for listening to this, the Homeowners Friend Podcast, the podcast that will help you achieve the American dream and live the best life you can, even on a rice and beans budget. I'm Steve, your host, and today's topic is going to be another continuation of our electrical series. And today, particularly, we're going to talk about the various kinds of circuit breakers that are available. Now, I know that, you know, many of you know what a circuit breaker is. But you may not know that there's actually quite a few different kinds of circuit breakers that you're going to probably end up using in your house. And you probably don't understand how the things work, and you may not also know about the requirements in the electrical code. So we're going to try and address some of these concerns in this podcast. So the first thing is, what is a circuit breaker and what's it used for? Why do you need it? And, you know, I guess a little bit of history or what have you. Back in the old days, you know, 20, 30 years ago, or beyond, most houses had fuses in them. And the fuses, a fuse was just a piece of, it was just a little glass. Usually they were like a glass tube, or like a round, kind of like sort of like a little light bulb base thing that screwed into a socket, but it didn't really have a bulb. It just had a little glass cover on it, and you could see the little fuse in there, so you'd see if it would blow. They had these little fuses in there in a box in the basement to protect against fire because of overloaded electrical circuits. As you all know, if you connect something that's very large, a large electric demand, that is, something very large, could be a small heater, but something that uses a lot of electricity to a, let's say, a small diameter, small capacity extension cord, and let it run for a while, you'll notice that the extension cord gets warm. The whole cord gets warm. I'm sure you've all felt that. Now, and of course, through our whole house is a whole bunch of different wires, you know, the wiring for the house running all through all the walls, up against wood and insulation, which may or may not be flammable. And you know, like say all the wood and everything else that's in your walls. And if those wires get overheated too much, they can cause a fire. So if you had, like a lot of old houses had maybe, you know, one circuit for like the whole kitchen or maybe even the whole first floor. I mean, a lot of these houses had maybe four or five, six circuits on the whole house, which by today's, you know, standards is crazy. But back then you had, you know, maybe an electric toaster and a blender, and that's about it. You know, you really didn't use much electricity. But now you've got, you know, very high wattage microwave ovens that are in the 1500 watt range, which, you know, that'll draw over 10 amps, probably 13 amps right there, just your microwave on high power. You've also got, you know, again, you've got toasters, you've got blenders, you've got convection ovens, you've got little, you know, portable grills and you know, coffee makers, and, you know, coffee maker draws a fair amount of juice. All these things draw a lot of electricity. And if you put them all on that one breaker, and on that one circuit, if you didn't have a breaker or a fuse that was properly sized, and you turned, you know, several of these things on, it wouldn't have to be all of them, several of these things on, you could pretty easily go over the maximum current rating for that piece of wire. So let's say it's a piece of standard 12 gauge wire. It's good for about 20 amps. If you have, you know, if you have a waffle iron in a microwave, and right there you're probably over 20 amps or pretty close to it. Add a few other things in your coffee maker, and you know, who knows what else, you could very easily go over that 20 amps. If you were to do that for any period of time, or if you went way over that 20 amps, I mean, if you started really drawing, you know, 40 or 50 amps, which is possible, You know, you could be vacuuming, you could have an electric heater going. There's any number of things you could have on a circuit, especially if it was, you know, half the house, that would make that circuit be really, really way over capacity. And, you know, as you do that, obviously the electrical wires and the walls and everywhere else are going to start heating up. And, you know, they're going to get to a point where they're going to get so hot. I mean, these wires can physically glow red when they get that hot. And when that happens, the insulation will start to burn on the wires. And perhaps the everything that's around the wires will also start to burn. And before you know it, you got a smoky fire in your house, and which leads to a real big fire shortly if you don't get it out. So that's why they put breakers and fuses in, to protect from that overcurrent. Condition that's very, very dangerous. In addition, of course, it helps protect the owners of the home. If for some reason it did something dumb, or a kid did and stuck something in the outlet, or somehow shorted something out, or had a faulty appliance maybe that was shorted out or something, it would also trip or blow the breaker to protect the wiring and the appliance to some extent from being damaged by all that current. So, they're a very, very important life safety item that is definitely needed. Now, in the old days, especially those screw-in type fuses, could be bypassed pretty easily with a penny. You could stick a penny in there if the fuse blew, and people have done this, and they burned houses down doing it. That, you know, they'll take the fuse out, they'll put a penny in there, and then they'll screw the fuse back in. And what it does is it shorts out the center, which is the feed, and the outside edge, which is the where the power goes out. You short that out, and all of a sudden you've got the power again in the circuit. And they're like, oh well, we'll go and, you know, get a new fuse right away. And then they forget, and the next thing they know, they're running all these things, and the wire starts smoking. So that's a serious problem. Now, modern breakers are circuit breakers are a far cry from the old fuses. They work a lot better. In a lot of cases, they're quicker to respond. They can look for things other than high current, and we'll talk about that. They can actually look for high current in different ways as well, which is more, the old fuses worked pretty much purely on a heat situation. They would get so hot they would just burn up. You could run a lot of current through them for a short period and they may not blow, whereas the new ones probably would pop. If that condition were occurring, and that could be just a short somewhere happening, a quick short, intermittent short. So the new ones are actually more safe. But the big thing about breakers is that they're resettable. So if you do have too many things running, and you trip the breaker, you just go downstairs and turn a couple things off, and go downstairs and reset it, and you're back in business. So they're a big big advantage from that standpoint. So I just want to talk a little bit about the different kinds of breakers, because there's three main types of them, and there's some subtypes and whatnot, but we'll just talk briefly about it, enough for you to have enough knowledge to know what the kind that you need to buy for your particular project. Now, standard breakers, which are set up for certain current ratings, 10 amps, 15 amps, 20 amps, 30, 50, 100 amps, whatever it may be, are designed simply to trip if that current rating is exceeded by a certain amount, or at all, depending on the breaker. And they do this in a couple different ways. All the breakers, of course, they've got a switch on them, which, you know, so you can turn the power on and off to a certain circuit. So if you're going to work on a circuit, you can turn the power off to it very easily with the modern breaker. But it also, you know, if it trips, you can tell it's tripped because the breaker, the switch is in the middle, and if you wiggle it, it's kind of loose, whereas it's normally tight either on or off. So you know it's tripped, and you just basically turn it off, turn it back on again, and it resets. Now, these breakers they're actually pretty complicated little things. There's one of like two different ways that they can trip, and it depends on the breaker and how much you spend for them and stuff like that. There's actually different ones. And it also depends on the application. For standard homes, they're usually they just look at a temperature, which is a heating effect, to trip them. And how they do that is they have a They have a bi-metal piece in there that has one kind of metal on one side and a different kind of metal on the other side. And they have different resistances. And when you start running a lot of current through those, through that piece of metal, it's a bimetallic strip, they call it. I just had to look it up because I forgot the name of it. And when current flows through that thing, what happens is one side has a lower resistance than the other, and the higher resistance side will actually heat up more than the lower resistance side does. And when that happens, that strip, that bimetallic strip, will actually start to bend a little bit, because when metal heats up, it expands, and when it doesn't, when it gets cooler, it contracts. So if one side is expanding quicker than the other, it gets hotter than the other side and expands quicker than the other, the strip will actually start to bend. And when it starts to bend, it releases the breaker. There's a spring-loaded device in there that will trip the breaker open. And as that starts to bend, it like releases that spring. It's kind of like a mousetrap arrangement. You know, when you just tap that little cheese thing a little bit, and it springs. You know, you release a lot of energy in it, and it trips the breaker. Some of the breakers also utilize, and so that works totally on heat. It's a heating thing. So if you have a lot of, they're pretty much looking for a current over a long period of time, and you know the thought is that bimetallic strip will heat up, you know, before your wiring will. So, but even if you're running maybe 19 or 20 amps for a long time, that strip will eventually get hot enough and trip. You know, they're pretty accurate. I mean, they're able to handle 20 amps. Maybe you got to run 21 or 22 amps through them for a while for them to trip. And that's probably why I've seen on some of these that after they trip and you reset them, they're easier to trip again. It's probably because they're already well heated up in there, and it doesn't take as much to heat them up. So that's something I've noticed personally with these things. But there's also some of the panels have a solenoid arrangement as well. Now, a solenoid is an electrical coil that basically it's a bunch of wires. Like if you took a piece of, you know, 3 or 4 foot long piece of pretty fine wire and wrapped it around a piece of metal, like a bolt or something like that, and you put a battery across that wire, you know, one end on one terminal on one end, the other terminal on the other end, ran a current through it, you set up an electrical charge within that coil, and it would transfer to that bolt, and the bolt would become magnetized. It's a pretty cool little experiment. You can do that. You know, use like, you know, 22 gauge wire or something, and just wrap like, you know, 20 turns or 30 turns around a screw, and put a little voltage across that. You'll see what I mean. Not a lot, because it'll get run too much current. It'll get hot. But just you know, a small battery or something for a couple of minutes. You can play with it and just make sure that the cable doesn't get too hot. But it makes an electromagnet essentially, and a solenoid is nothing but an electromagnet arrangement that when it is energized, it pulls on something or pushes on something, and when it's energized, it'll actually pull that something all the way. You can use a solenoid to turn a circuit on. You apply a little bit of current to that solenoid, it'll pull a lever, which will then in return turn on a large amount of current, a big switch, so to speak. So you could use a little switch to throw a big switch by use of a solenoid. So what these breakers have is they have a solenoid in them, which has a coil, and a certain amount of the current is flowing through the coil, which is directly related to how much current is flowing through the circuit breaker. And as that current increases and gets to a point, the coil develops a strong enough electromagnetic field to pull the solenoid, which trips the breaker. Kind of like the bimetallic spring arrangement. But it takes a certain amount of current through that coil to pull enough on that, or push enough on that solenoid to get the thing to trip. So these are a lot quicker to respond. As soon as you get enough current, you know, that stays on for even a pretty short period of time, it'll push that solenoid and then throw the breaker. So these are a little faster to respond to, like, surges. If you have a surge, like a quick arc, or you know, just for a few seconds, it pulls a lot of current. So those are a little quicker, but you know, if you're running maybe just a little bit more than the current for a long, long time, they'll never trip, even though things could be starting to heat up. So kind of the best breakers have both. They have the heat and the coil arrangement as well. But I think, you know, I think the basic cheap $3, $4, $5 breakers that you buy at your home center, you know, the GEs and Murrays and stuff, I think they're mainly all heat type, because it's the cheapest and easiest to make. But I believe the other ones are available and are, you know, are sometimes used for certain, you know, applications. So that's your basic breaker. Like I say, they're really cheap. You know, don't use used ones or anything like that. You know, when you do your house, get a new breaker box, get all new breakers for it. Typically they're called a load center. The breaker box is usually called like a load center. And you need to get the breakers that fit in the load center. There's different brands of breaker, obviously. You can't buy a GE load center and put, you know, Murray breakers in it necessarily. Although I think Murray's and GE's might be compatible. But I know, like, what's the other company there that makes these things? Having a brain cramp. But anyway, you can't necessarily mix the brands between breakers and panels. You know, if you have one brand of panel, you need to have that same brand of breaker and the right breaker for that panel. So just keep that in mind when you buy them, buy matched sets. So that's kind of your standard breakers. And there's two other types that I want to discuss, which are a little bit newer. And I mean, regular breakers, like I've been talking about, they've been around for quite a while. The first one was invented years and years and years ago, 100 years ago or something. But there's some other ones that are a little bit more recent on the scene, which take that protection one step further. The first type is a GFCI, or ground fault circuit interrupter. It looks just like a regular breaker, with the exception of an additional white wire coming off in it. Now, how these work, and by the way, they're required in any area where it can get wet. And the code specifies bathrooms, kitchens, laundry areas, garages, and outdoor areas. So any plug that's in any of those, what I'd say, four or five areas, that's kitchens, bathrooms, laundry, garages, and outdoors, five places. Anytime you have an outlet in one of those five places, it has to have a ground fault circuit interrupter. And you can basically achieve this in one of two ways. You can either put in a ground fault circuit breaker, which I'll talk about, or you can put in a ground fault outlet. They make outlets that do this as well. And the neat thing about the outlets is they have outlet screws on them. So if you put the ground fault outlet at your first outlet from the panel, any outlet that's after it, assuming you put it on the screws that, you know, that are provided to give you protection, any outlet after it will also be covered under that ground fault circuit, the ground fault outlet. And these units are pretty cheap. They're like, I think you can get them as cheap as $10, $12, $13, depending on the brand and where you buy them and stuff. They're pretty inexpensive. They're not foolproof. I've had them go bad. I've actually got a bad one in my laundry room right now. And I'm actually currently running my washing machine off an extension cord off another one that's in that same room. And what happens is the thing just trips for no reason at all. There's nothing wrong with the laundry machine, because I plug it into another one and it works just fine. And occasionally you get this. They just get too sensitive or something goes wrong with them and they trip for no apparent reason. And that does happen. But, you know, it's a pretty cheap device, so we don't cry too loudly when it happens. We just replace it and move on. And I've actually just got a new one, so I need to get up there and install the thing one of these days when I'm not busy doing this podcast, which is like all the time, it seems. But anyway, so you could do it with those things, with those outlets. It looks like a regular outlet, one of those square-type outlets, you know, that's in a square box. You know, that... if you look at it, it looks like it's square, not like a figure eight like the other ones. And they've got a little red and black button on the face between the two outlets. The red one is your test button, and the black one is your the other way around. I think the black one might be your test, and the red button is like your reset. So if the red button pops out, it's been tripped, and you have to push the red button back in again. If you hit the black button, it tests it. It should pop out at that point, and you just push the red one back in again. I believe it's how they are. I don't look at them very often, but I believe that's how they're set up. So the other option, though, of course, is to put in a ground fault circuit interrupter circuit breaker for an entire circuit. And those units are, they work identical, and I'll tell you how they work in a minute, but they work identical to the other ones, but they're mounted in the panel box. And many people have argued that it's a better way to go for a host of reasons, not the least of which is they're just more reliable. They're also more expensive, and they're also a little bit more difficult to put in if you don't like playing around in your panel box. So you can make your decision where to put them. But they all work pretty much the same. And how they work, they're looking for a ground fault. And what is a ground fault? Well, normally when you have a device that's operating, let's say it's a clothes washer, and the device has a three-prong plug on it, has a ground and then a hot and a neutral, standard 110 volt plug. Typically, the current going out of the hot will all return back in the neutral. That's in theory how it's supposed to work. There shouldn't be any power coming back on the ground. The ground is just there to bleed off any static that may develop on the unit, and to protect the operator against any shorts. Because without the grounds in the old days, you could have a little wire short in there that could be putting 120 volt to the case of the appliance, and the appliance might still work just fine, but it's got a hot case. Could be a bad insulator, could be a bad motor, there's any number of things that can go wrong to cause this condition. And having a ground connected to it will take that and bleed that voltage off the ground, so when you touch it, you don't get belted. So, you know, grounds have been around for quite a while, and they're obviously a very good idea, and you certainly don't want to bypass any kind of ground. If you have an old house with two-prong outlets, you need to replace the outlets and not cut the cord off and replace those on the units. You want to keep your grounds intact. It's very important. So in normal times, the electricity goes out the positive and in the neutral, and the ground never even pulls in to effect here. And how a ground fault circuit interrupter works is this is how it was explained to me, and I don't know if exactly correct, but it makes sense this way anyway. I believe it is. My old electronics teacher explained it. It basically looks at the current going through the hot lead and the current going through the neutral, and it looks for a differential in those two readings. They should be obviously the same, but if for some reason the hot line is sending out more current than is returning on the neutral line, something is going wrong. That is not a normal condition. There's electricity leaking somewhere, and it's probably going to ground because there's no other place for it to go, for the most part. So that condition will make the ground fault circuit interrupter trip. It'll shut it off. It's saying there's something wrong. There's more juice going out this wire than there is coming in the other wire. It must be going through a person or going through the case to ground or something like that. And I believe these also look at the ground lines as well, because there really should be no current flowing through the ground. If there is, that's also a problem. So that will also trip it, I believe. So, but they do work even if you have two prongs in it, a two-prong device. And you can you can test this, although I don't recommend you doing it necessarily. But if you had an extension cord that was plugged into a GFI outlet and you dropped it in water, for example, and had some water in the sink and you just dipped the end of the cord, you know, obviously touching the dry part of the cord, if you dipped it in the water, it should immediately trip. And what it's doing, because that water and the plumbing and everything is conducting some of the electricity to ground. And that should make it trip immediately. If you had a regular breaker, it might not actually trip, because you might not be having enough current flowing through the two wires Even though some of it's flowing to ground or someplace else, you might not have enough current there to actually trip the breaker. So it's a very dangerous condition. So if you're in your bathroom with, you know, using a blow dryer or something, and you know, somehow it gets wet or you get wet or something, and the breaker notices that, oh, look, the power is going somewhere else, I think the owner might be getting shocked, it'll shut off and save you from being hurt. I mean, they operate, obviously, very, very quickly. As soon as they sense any strangeness there, they immediately trigger. So that's how they work. In addition, of course, they're also looking at, you know, maximum currents and stuff in the circuit, just like a regular circuit breaker. So they're one step better. And like I say, they've been required for a while in all bathrooms and kitchens, garages, laundry rooms, and outside outlets. And I definitely recommend you use them, without a doubt. Now, there's a new one. Well, I say new, I don't know how long they've been around, but it's relatively new. They're called arc fault breakers. Arc fault breakers. AFBs. And arc fault breakers take your GFI kind of one step further. What they look for is, can you guess? Arcs. Any kind of arc. And an arc is when electricity is jumping from one wire or from a wire to something else. It's a short. It's an arc. Electricity is being arced. And they detect that somehow. Now, these things have, like, I guess, filters in them. I don't know. I've never seen inside one. But from what I've read, they have filters in them that listen for this kind of electrical noise on the line, a significant arc. And if they hear that, if they sense that, then they will trip immediately. Now, what good are they? Well, they're very, very good. And, of course, they also look for over-voltage, over-current conditions like regular breakers as well. But they're required now by code in all bedrooms, and they're going to be, I think in the newest electrical code, they're actually required in all living areas, but not all jurisdictions are under the newest code. So you probably have to put them in your bedrooms, most likely, but you may not have to put them everywhere, but it wouldn't be a bad investment. Now, what they do is, in how they protect you, is if there's any kind of short or partial open or some kind of arcing happening in your lines anywhere, they'll immediately trip. Now, why is this important? When I was in Vermont, I was on a fire department, and a fellow had it was a pretty nice older home. It was a it was a nice house that was used as a bed and breakfast. And he was doing some renovations in this house, and he had put, I guess, you know, he was an educated type fellow, and he had a lot of books and papers and everything else, and he had filing cabinets full of the stuff that he's read and written and whatever. And he was doing some renovations in the house, and he put all this kind of stuff in one room when he was renovating the rest of the second floor, I believe is what the deal was. And this room, had all these books and papers in them, and they were in filing cabinets. And he had a temporary lamp set up in that room so he could have some light, find things, and do his work and whatever. And the extension cord for the light happened to go underneath one of these filing cabinets. And if you've ever looked on the bottom of a cheap filing cabinet, and perhaps even a good one, you'll notice that the metal comes down the side of the cabinet and is bent over the bottom of the cabinet and welded on there. So there's a small place where the metal on the side ends, and you know, then you're on top of the metal for the bottom of the cabinet. And what happened is that little seam, that little sharp point, was digging into the extension cord. Not a lot. It wasn't necessarily immediately tripping breakers, but there was a little arcing going on under there. And nobody really knows for how long, but it certainly happened. And one day he's working in the house, and he had that plug, you know, that lamp or whatever it was, plugged in, and the breaker tripped. And he didn't think much of it because he was using saws and whatever, doing other work up there. So he went down and flipped the breaker, and he thought he heard like a humming on the breaker, but he couldn't quite tell. So he left and went back upstairs and started working again. Didn't really think much about it. And the door to this room was closed. So he's upstairs working, and all of a sudden he starts smelling smoke. And he opens up the door to that room and notes that that there's a pretty good fire brewing over in the corner, right where this cord's going underneath this filing cabinet. And what was happening is there was an arc happening underneath the cabinet, and there was I forget if it was a wood floor or carpet underneath, but whatever was underneath finally caught and started burning. And the it started burning, and the cord then got even hotter because of there's wood burning next to it, and the cord started to melt, and it started to fire. And of course the room was full of papers and books, and it just, it really got going. Luckily he called the fire department right away, and he thought that he stayed there and try and fight the fire himself, which I guess if you think you can do it safely, I guess it's not a bad idea, but if there's any chance you can get hurt, you need to get the hell out of the house. Pardon my Italian, but it's very easy to get hurt in these kind of situations. So being a firefighter, I don't recommend you fight your own fires. Unless it's something really, really small, you have an easy way out, which this guy did. It was one bedroom, and the stairs were right behind him. So he was hitting it with an extinguisher, and then I think he dragged his hose in. He was hitting it with the hose a little bit. But it got ahead of him, as it often will, because you don't have much water in a little garden hose to put out a pretty good fire, and he actually got smoke inhalation. And I just tell you this because I don't want you to get hurt if this kind of thing happens. He ended up getting smoke inhalation, and he was outside when we got there. And he was just kind of sitting down and not looking really good, and he got progressively worse because he wasn't really getting any oxygen into his lungs, and he ended up having to go to the hospital. But he was fine or whatever; it's no big deal. But he just got a lot of smoke in his lungs, and luckily, the truck got there quick enough, and we got some hoses up and got the thing out, and he had damage to the house, certainly, but it wasn't, total loss. It did get up in the attic a little bit, which is the worst part, but it was, we got there quick enough where we were able to put everything out. So anyway, the moral of the story is he had an arcing situation, and it did trip the breaker, but it took quite a while, and then he reset the breaker, and the thing arced long enough to start a fire in his house, and he had regular circuit breakers in his house. It wasn't like he had a penny in there or something, or didn't have a proper breaker. He did. The problem was it didn't trip. And this is a shortcoming that those devices have, is that they don't always trip when they need to. So these devices were developed to solve just that kind of problem. And so if you have even a loose screw on your on one of your outlets, let's say, and you're daughter or son plugs an electric heater into it and turns the electric heater on, and that screw is a little bit loose and the wire's shaking in there and it starts arcing a little bit, it'll immediately trip the thing. Otherwise it could sit there and arc for a while and overheat that outlet, and then before you know it, you've got smoke coming out of the walls and in a possible fire situation. So they're very, very handy for that, and I recommend using them. The problem is they're a bit on an expensive side. They're not that cheap, and I wish I remembered the price of them, but I think they were in the $40 to $50 range each, versus $3 for a regular one. and I think they were even more expensive than the GFI ones. I don't remember how much those were, because I actually didn't use GFI breakers. I used GFI outlet. At the outlets, I used them mainly in mine because of the cost of the breakers. But the breakers are better, but I was broke, so I did what I had to do. But I did want to mention that they have them both ways. But I did put them in. I did put the new arc faults in the bedrooms as required by code. So I had to buy like four or five of these things, and it cost me a bit of money. But I'm glad I did. And it's good because in bedrooms, of course, you got people sleeping, and you often have a lot of lamps and extension cords and radios and TVs and all kinds of other crap in your bedroom. And you've also got a bed, and you've got carpeting usually, and you've got somebody sleeping. So it's a recipe for disaster if this kind of thing happens. So it's a good idea to put them in anyway, and it's also required. Now, I forgot to mention that the GFCIs, and I believe the arc faults as well, have the breakers have an extra white wire dangling off them, and that's to be tied to, or it's green wire, white wire thing. It's to be tied to ground. typically. You read the instructions, but I believe it has to be tied to ground. And what that does is just gives the unit a ground reference point for when it's doing its checking the circuit. It needs a ground, so you need to make sure you hook that ground up. If you don't hook that little white wire up to ground or neutral, I think it's ground they want, then you're it's not going to work, and you spent money for nothing. So you got to go ahead and connect that to ground. Now, a little word about grounding. We talked yesterday about, or the day before, whatever it was, about, you know, your ground rods and everything else. Ground and neutral are essentially the same thing. In fact, if you go out to your telephone pole and look, there's probably a ground rod there, and it's probably, you'll see the wire running up the pole, and it's actually connected to the neutral. So the neutrals on the pole is actually a ground. And so the power plants actually use earth ground as basically as a return, and they also have wires doing it as well. Now, you may ask, well, if neutral's ground, then why do you need a separate ground? And I'll even tell you a story. I built my house in Vermont, and I ended up putting a garage in, and I ran. I said, well, you know, I need to run. I ran 220 out to the garage. I said, I'll run to I think I ran number fours or whatever it was for 100 amp service. I forget what it called for. I think that's what it was. I don't remember. Copper, you know. I ran the two hots, the two blacks, and I ran a white out to the garage. I said, that's all I need. You know, that's the two hots and neutral. And then I grounded the panel out in the garage to ground. And actually, by code, when I went to sell the house, the inspector nailed me on that. The home inspector said, nope, it's got to be, by code, it has to have four wires going out there. It has to have a neutral and a ground. And the reason for that is what I'm going to explain, is that they're the same thing, but they're separated for a reason, and the reason is safety. If you had your house and you didn't have a good ground, let's say, which happens often. I mean, it's pretty easy for the wire going to a ground rod to get broke or to corrode to the point where it doesn't work anymore. I mean, you got to inspect these things every now and then. It's pretty easy for that to get ruined. If that were to get ruined, and then let's say the neutral coming into the house also broke open, or it could break open in your breaker box. You know, somehow your neutral could get corroded and not have connection anymore. Then all of a sudden you've got hot lines going to things, and there's no negative return, and there's no neutral, and it's a very dangerous situation. So that's why they have a ground and a neutral. So if either one of them fails, you still have the other. And that's why it's just a safety thing. And I'm going to tell you another story too. And this is a problem that happens more than I think folks like to know about. It personally happened to me, and I know one other person personally that it happened to, and professionally I heard of one other person that it happened to. So it's I think it's worth repeating. It's not very common, but it does happen. Your 120 volt circuits are they get their power from one of the black hot leads in your neutral, right? And that's how you get your 120 volts. What occasionally happens, and sometimes it's the power company's fault, and sometimes it could be your fault, is that you'll lose that neutral. If you lose that neutral, if somehow the neutral cable gets disconnected, and the person that I know that had this happen, the neutral got disconnected out on the phone pole somehow. I don't know what happened, but something happened at the power pole. Something happened out there, and it was actually the power company's fault. And I believe the power company paid to fix the stuff that got burnt out. I'll tell you how that happened. In my own case, this happened when I was quite a bit younger in my old house when I was living with my parents. We had a 1960-something breaker box down in the basement, very old thing. It was starting to rust. You could see rust on it. And what had happened is the weatherhead, or the seal above the meter socket or something somewhere along the way, started leaking water, and a little bit of water was coming down inside the cable. This is why I said you got to seal them up. A little water was coming down inside the cable, and it actually ran down the cables onto onto the lug on the breaker box, and it was actually running down through the breaker box and out the bottom. It wasn't much water, mind you. It was a few drops now and then. It wasn't enough where we saw water pouring out of the breaker box or anything like that. It was just a little bit of moisture. And what happened is that moisture made the lug get all corroded. And eventually, the neutral stopped conducting. And what happens when that happens is really pretty scary. If you have, you remember how I said that the branches are split. You have, half the breakers roughly go to one side of one black to neutral, and like half the stuff goes to the other black and neutral. If you have a very high current device on one side, and the other side has lower current devices. Now, higher current device, I'm talking, it's draining power. It's not there, but it actually drains power. So let's say you have an electric hot water heater, which we did. Electric hot water heaters, scrap that. That wouldn't work. I don't know what did this. It could have been, it must have been 110 volt. Maybe we had an electric heater going. Maybe it was just that there was more things on one side, but somehow that load got unbalanced, and there was a lower, it could have been the refrigerator kicked in, and actually the refrigerator didn't burn out, I bet you it was the refrigerator, so the refrigerator or something kicks in on one side of the breaker box, and when something that draws a lot of current like that, like the refrigerator kicks in, it has a very low resistance, and when something has a low resistance, it the voltage across that cable can drop. I mean, obviously, when your air conditioner kicks in, the voltage dips a little bit in your house, and you see the lights dim. Well, in this case, it was doing that on one side of the breaker box, essentially, when that thing kicked in. Whatever, I don't even know what it was. It could have been the well pump. I don't know, whatever it was that kicked in. Something kicked in that was high current. Could have been a blow dryer. I don't know. So that thing kicked in and was drawing a lot of current. On the other side of the breaker were a bunch of high resistance things. For example, the TV set, some clock radios, the VCR, the microwave. I'm trying to think of all the things that burnt out. there was a host of things that burnt out in the house. I had a VCR in the basement that burnt out. What happens is, remember, the ground is gone now. So what you have is a bunch of things on one side plugged in that are connected to this center, the center neutral that's not connected to the neutral outside anymore. It's not connected to ground. It's just floating, so to speak. And then, so you have high resistance stuff on one side, and then you have this low resistance thing on the other side. And what happens is, because there's no neutral anymore, the only way that high current thing can get power is if it comes through the high resistance stuff on the other side, because there's no neutral anymore. So it's like, essentially what happens is the low, that high current device becomes essentially a short, or enough of a short, where there's basically no voltage across that device anymore. And it's a short because you can't get the current you need, because it has to flow through the devices on the other side, which are high resistance. They don't let enough current through to run the device on the other side. And what happens is the full 220 volts ends up being applied across the circuits on the high side, the high resistance side, which was, in this case, a couple of clock radios, our VCR, TV, a bunch of light bulbs, and some other stuff. And my mother was home alone at the time, and she's sitting there, and all of a sudden, the lights get bright, like really bright, and then they pop off. And she's like, what the heck's going on? And then, smoke starts pouring out of the VCR, literally. The VCR literally starts, and the TV, both, I think, or one or the other, literally starts smoking. And she's like, what the heck's going on? So she runs over and unplugs it. And weird stuff's happening, that things are starting to make noise in the house. and she's looking around, and luckily she went down and turned the breaker off, the main breaker, because she figured something was going on, and she called us, and we came and looked and figured out what had happened. what happens is that that high current thing puts ends up putting all the voltage across some of your circuits and blows stuff up. And it's a very, very scary thing to have happen. So the moral of the story is make sure water can't get in, and make sure that that you check that, you should take the cover off your breaker box every 6 months to a year and just take a look in there and see if anything looks astray. If you see any kind of corrosion at all, pull that thing out, throw it in the closest dumpster, and replace it. What would have happened if she wasn't home? The house would have burnt down. That's what would have happened. No question in my mind. It burnt out a whole bunch of things, and luckily the insurance covered it, because it was an act of God kind of an arrangement, they said, and they ended up paying to replace the breaker box and the meter socket and the wire coming in, and they ended up replacing all the stuff that burnt out. So, in the end, it worked out okay, but it was pretty scary. So, just bear in mind that can happen if you lose your ground. So make sure you have a good ground. Obviously, in that house, the ground was no damn good either. The ground probably would have helped. I don't know if it'll work as well as the neutral, but it probably would have worked. I think the ground was probably pretty bad too. So this is why, it's important to make sure this stuff is done right. So I wanted to mention that. We're up to 45 minutes already to talk about just a few things, but I think they're very important. So that's why I wanted to spend time on them, so you can understand how they work and the importance of these devices, and so you don't be cheap when you're doing it, because this is life safety stuff. You don't want to skimp on life safety stuff. Like I said before, you don't want to skimp on the important stuff when you build your house. I don't care if you put in, the 3/8 rough plywood as a kitchen countertop. I'd rather see that than see improper breakers or crummy insulation or something that really matters. You can skimp out on that other stuff, and when you get a few dollars in your pocket, you can go and upgrade that stuff and fix it and finish it. Don't put any trim up or whatever. That's fine, but make sure you do this other stuff, this life safety stuff, and the stuff that you can't fix later. Like insulation, you can't fix later. So you want to make sure you do that stuff, the important stuff first. So with that, I'm going to sign with you. I thank you again very much for listening to this, the Homeowner's Friend Podcast, the podcast that will help you achieve the American dream and live the best life you can and keep safe, even on a rice and beans budget, although you might have to even cut back on that to afford some of these breakers. But anyway, take care, folks. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
It'll take me a week to clean it, but by then I'll still be drunk. I got the blues. Oh, the homeowner blues. Well, man's home is his castle. This one's just a hassle. Homeowner blues.